and Venezuela decide to talk, not fight, over an oil-rich region. Hello, you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne, and a very good morning to you. Guyana and Venezuela have agreed to not use force to settle their dispute over the oil-rich region of Essequibo. They've been holding emergency talks after a referendum in Venezuela suggested it could annex the region. And Venezuela's President Maduro says he would allow oil exploration there. But Guyana has already signed deals with oil and gas giants ExxonMobil and Chevron. Now, Essequibo is not a sliver of land. It's the size of Florida and makes up two-thirds of Guyana, which was awarded the region by the International Tribunal in 1899. These residents in Essequibo told the BBC how they feel about it all.
Very scared about what could happen because we already know what happened in Venezuela with Maduro. He already destroyed Venezuela.
I have it in my mind that Venezuela will not make a move towards Guyana, at least not by force. We are a zone of peace, as they say.
Ralph Gonsalves, the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, is the man who got the leaders of Guyana and Venezuela to sit together.
The companies in Guyana exploring for oil, largely American. If you have anything adverse to American lives or property, you can see where that would lead. Guyana is not a match militarily for Venezuela, and it is building alliances with other hemispheric entities. And if you were to have a conflict, you don't need any imagination to see the kind of conflagration you're going to have. We are all seeking to use diplomacy to diffuse a situation which could easily get out of hand and lead to destabilization and bloodshed. Nobody wants that.
That was Ralph Gonsalves, the Prime Minister of the Caribbean nation of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Now, let's do the numbers. China's economic recovery is still recovering, with figures from last month showing weak demand and a lingering property crisis, despite the fact that this official data shows industrial output and retail sales expanded. Actually, it's comparing it to last year, which gives you a distorted picture because back then, COVID lockdowns were still in full force. European Union leaders are meeting again for the second day of their summit in Brussels. Yesterday was quite dramatic. Hungary blocked a $55 billion aid package for Ukraine. But its Prime Minister Viktor Orban also abstained from a vote on opening formal talks about Ukraine joining the EU, which ultimately allowed it to go through. The BBC's Danny Eberhard reports from Brussels.
The talks stretched long into the night on budget wrangles, including whether to provide billions in grants and loans to Ukraine over the next 4 years. In the end, Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban deployed his threatened veto. The head of the European Council, Charles Michel, said the other 26 EU states had firmly supported the measures, adding that talks would resume early next year. It was a come down after the surprise announcement on accession talks. That was greeted euphorically by both Ukraine and most EU leaders. Kyiv will hope delays on EU financial assistance are temporary.
Danny Eberhard there. Overnight trains are making a comeback in Europe as part of a push for greener, cheaper travel. A sleeper train connecting Berlin and Paris has returned after nearly a decade. The service is being heavily subsidised by the French government. It's investing $11 million a year to keep prices down. The BBC's Lisa Louis reports.
I'm at Berlin train station. Getting by day train to Paris in France is actually quite difficult. It takes about 8.5 hours and can cost up to $380. But now, for the first time since 2014, there is a night line.
Hello, ich muss in den 421er.
Taking a plane from Berlin to Paris would cost around $97. On this train, basic prices vary between $37 and $86. For a simple seat, a so-called couchette, which I've gone for, a small compartment with six bunk beds, and a proper bed. These prices can go up, depending on the current demand. And it's environmentally friendly. Planes produce around 28 times as much CO2 as trains on the same journey, according to Brussels-based NGO Transport and Environment. Let's walk over to the more luxurious part of this train. Austria's railroad operator ÖBB is running the so-called nightjet connections together with Germany's DB, France's SNCF and Belgium's NMBS SNCB. Kurt Bauer from ÖBB is here.
We have around 30 different routes. We currently have 1.5 million passengers per year, and we plan to have 3 million by end of this decade on night trains.
It's now a quarter to midnight. Oh my God, but I think there's a fire and there's smoke in the hallways.
It's happening way too much, unfortunately, stuff like that.
Oh really? What's your name?
Thibaut. Constant.
Because you're taking the night train quite often?
Yeah, quite a lot. I'm a YouTuber specialized in train. Unfortunately, the rolling stock is just way too old.
So it seems that they left something for too long in the microwave. And so it started burning and smoking. It's now half an hour later and we are rolling again. Old rolling stock is just one of the problems making it difficult to break even operating night lines, Philippe Gagnepin tells me. He's an economist at Sorbonne University in Paris.
These are still the same trains we would take 20 years ago. So there's a huge investment to be made. Companies still have to pay the infrastructure operators. Without subsidies, I don't think it is viable.
But as it happens, European governments are subsidizing night trains, at least certain European governments, such as the French one.
I'm Clément Beaune, I'm the French Minister for Transportation. We have put more than 150 million euro of investment to renovate and to buy new carriages or new trains, and we will probably add to that a few hundred millions.
We are now arriving at Paris Est train station with a delay of only 15 minutes. Compared to the 2 hours a plane trip would take, this was 14 hours on a sleeper train, and it didn't involve much sleep for me. So I think I'm going to catch up on that now. I'm the BBC's Lisa Louis for Marketplace.
And finally, in rural France, angry farmers are flipping road signs upside down to draw attention to what they say is their increasingly precarious way of life. And according to the Farmers Union, it's worked and led to a government climb down on two taxes next year. And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Our producer today is James Graham, studio director Gavin Goratsky. I'm Liana Byrne with the Marketplace Morning Report. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.